200 years since they invaded Aboriginal land.
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Don't call me a problem. I am not the problem. I have never left my country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tierce Johnson, Gomeroi journalist. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today to wherever you're listening, your elders past and present, and I extend that greeting especially up to the Gumbangi Nation today, where my guest comes from. Chris Flanders is a long-time sports journalist. He's worked in black media for a couple of decades now at SBS, NITV, Courier Mail. You name it, he's there. One of his biggest loves is the Koori knockout. But what I want to talk to him today is about disability rugby league. It's huge, and the pathways are really opening up for our mob with a disability to play rugby league and sports in general. So I want to have a wide-ranging chat to Chris about sports journalism and some of the stories he's been up to. Chris, welcome to the show, brother.
Benny, how are you, brother? Good to be yarning to you again.
Yeah, it's good to be actually having a chat without you texting me with, your torments over the Bulldogs.
I don't get the torment and, Skype too much about the Dogs at the moment, so, any chance I can.
Yes, you certainly take any chance you do. Hey, brother, before we get into it, your mob, your country, and a bit about yourself, please.
Yeah, as you said there, so I'm from Coffs Harbour, Gumbanga mob there, and my family's all from that area, Nambucca Heads, Yurunga, beautiful parts of the world there, and coastal mob, beaches, rivers, saltwater boy, and I'm down here living on the south coast here at the moment, near Lake Illawarra. So, it's a beautiful part of the world down here too. But, I'm from Coffs Harbour, me. So, big shout out to all the mob up home there, and, hope everyone's well and doing well and staying safe.
Yeah, shout out Big Banana Country up there, Big Banana. You can see Chris is up there. He's got his photo next to it. Brother... Take us back to where it all began with you. I'd love it for our audience to get to know you a little bit. Most of them out there do know you from your sports journalism now over a couple of decades. But take us way back to where it all began when little Flando was in high school, and I think you went down to Living Black, was it, back then?
I had always had a sort of interest in writing. I was always sort of pretty... creative, I think,
You're creative, all right, brother.
writing silly stuff and rubbish, yeah. But that sort of interested me, that, just sort of being a, sort of yarning to people and storytelling, I guess. And I know that when, obviously back in the day, they used to have, work experience, where you'd go out and do maybe a week or two with different sort of businesses. I actually had a week at the old Daily Mirror, which is, the Sydney newspaper. I think it's the Daily Telegraph now. And a week at the old Parramatta Advertiser from when I was living in, and growing up out sort of out in Sydney's west. I had a week there as well, and actually got to write, two little stories for the Parramatta Advertiser. And I thought, how good's this? So, was very keen on doing something, in the media, print or something like that. So I just didn't really have the grades, really, to sort of go on to university. So, I spent, 6 months sort of as a storm and packer, really, fresh out of school, just, trying to get a bit of, coin in the pocket and, make my way in the world. And and everything. And it wasn't until probably 96, start of 96, was when the Indigenous Media Unit sort of really started doing some big things over there at the SBS studios in Artarmon in, you know, North Sydney there. And yeah, that's when they started ICAM. Some people may remember that one, the Indigenous Cultural Affairs magazine program, which sort of started, in 96. And
was that at SBS, was it?
Yeah, that was at SBS. So
I don't even remember that, ICAM.
Yeah, you know, Carla Grant, she was on there, she was there. Sol Belair, the late great man, he was there.
Legend.
The political reporter and everything, and, you know, with all his contacts that he had, he was there. Lorna O'Shane, John Harding, Julie Nimmo. There was a whole heap of sort of, you know, some fresh faces. Like, I was, you know, very, you know, beyond the years, I was that green. I was, you know, put the Hulk to shame, you know, I was that green. there were lots of, you know, really experienced sort of people there too. And as I said, you know, Carla Grant, who's, you know, still, you know, doing things there at SBS and NITV. So, I started there in February of 96, actually celebrated my 19th birthday when I started there. So
wow.
I was somehow got a job there, and, you know, I was supposed to be, my official title back in the day was a production assistant or something like that. But, you know, and I was supposed to be sort of helping people out and answering phones and doing, you know, doing this, you know, a bit of a go for this, go for that type thing. And
make me a cup of Chris.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's gone on them pretty quickly that, you know, I was, you know, wanting to get out and actually sort of, you know, do stories and stuff. So, you know, it wasn't too long before, you know, I was started going out with a, you know, crew just to do a little, you know, 90 second sort of, you know, minute and a half sort of story. And, it sort of started from there, really. And, you know, obviously then ICAM turned into Living Black, which started, I think, about 2003. And Carla was at the helm then. And
yep.
Sort of took us into a new sort of venture, really, too, where I think by 2004 we started going out and shooting our own stuff. So, you know, the term VJ now in media circles is not, you know, it is something that's, you know, you hear it all the time. But, you know, back then it was like, okay, we're going to give you a camera and you're going to go out and you're going to be a one-man crew. And I was like, what?
Yep.
You know, because we were used to, you know, going out with a full crew, you know, cameraman, sound recordist, maybe a producer. So sometimes there were, you know, three or four people out on a shoot. So
yeah, because that's when the TV industry worked out. We can just pay one person instead of four, and we can make one person do everything.
And, like, you know, we didn't really have all that much training, and at the time there wasn't a lot of VJs even at SBS. I think we did some work with the some of the Dateline crew, which is, you know, one of the current affairs shows on SBS TV, and, you know, because they were using VJs and going out, so, you know, we're sort of having a bit of working closely with them. But I guess that the good thing for me was that I had an interest in that already, and you know, I used to watch the cameramen very closely anyway. You know, what shots were they doing? You know, what were they looking at? What was the lighting? You know, okay, we can't do it here. You know, with the sound recorders, what were they listening out for? You know, we can't do a, you know, major interview along, you know, the highway there or something like that. Or, you know, what's that noise? Is that going to affect this? You know, so, yeah, I think for me I was already watching what they were doing anyway. And, I'd probably would look back and cringe at my first, you know, few stories, you know, because they probably, some of them would have been, you know, overexposed and different things like that. But it was a learning experience. It had to be, because there weren't, as I said, a lot of VJs at the time. But, you know, eventually as the years rolled on, and I absolutely loved going out and talking to people, but, you know, being able to shoot my own stuff with, you know, people and, get, you know, sequences and, you know, play around with different shots and get, you know, pull focuses here and
it's artistic filmmaking, but you're also a journalist telling a story, so it's sort of a two-pronged skill that you're doing to help tell the story for our mob, eh?
Yeah, exactly. And you're doing basically, you know, the three roles in one there, you know, the journalist sort of, you know, asking the questions and getting information and telling the story, but then also cameraman capturing the pictures and, you know, being the sound recordist and recording, you know, the audio and that type of thing too. So, look, I absolutely love that part of it. And, you know, it was something that I kept on doing right up until, you know, the time. And obviously when from there I went and worked with NITV and started sort of doing the sports, you know, on a full-time sort of basis with those guys in, you know, 2011, I think it was.
Mm.
But it wasn't too much longer after I sort of joined NITV is when, I guess, you know, mid-2012, I think it was, NITV sort of joined forces with SBS and, you know, is on, you know, free-to-air, you know, now. And I was able to do, you know, the presentation and do the daily sports, but still also able to go out and shoot my own stuff during the day. So,
yep.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's just something I've always loved is sort of speaking to mob and, you know, feeling very privileged to be able to sort of tell someone's story as well. So, you know, I always put 110% into everything that I tried to do with, you know, because, you know, it was important. It wasn't my story, it was their story. And
yeah, and you only get one chance of telling it.
That's right. And some of the mob had some amazing stories that, you know, you would never hear of before. Like, you know, if some of our... You know, or, you know, not some. If our black media wasn't there, you know, you don't get to hear those stories. You know, with what you're doing up there with the radio, you know, the newspapers and the remote networks that we have out there. You know, if they're not there, then you're not hearing these stories. So yeah, I felt in a very sort of privileged role, but also a very responsible sort of role as well. And yeah, it's something I still love doing now. Back doing a bit of, you know, freelance writing and that type of thing now, and just sort of being able to reconnect with mob and help tell people stories and get, you know, I guess, you know, educate people as well is something that I still enjoy after all these years, you know, considering I started it, you know, way back in, you know, 96.
What was it? Was there someone in your family, was it your parents that sort of led you into storytelling? Because you did start in sort of, general news and whatnot before you got into your sports. But was there someone? Because I know a few of the Flanders mob out there. There's some mad storytellers in that family. Very grand orators in terms of storytelling. You know, is there someone in the family that sort of pricked that interest for you, or is this something you just fell into naturally? Because it's important for our young mob out there to hear these sort of yarns.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we're all sort of storytellers, really, but, you know, it's, I guess with my family, like, you know, Dad, you know, busted his backside, you know, to put, you know, food on the table and, you know, send me to, you know, to a good school and stuff like that. And, you know, I think he was always sort of, you know, if you can, son, you know, get a good job. You know, don't, you know, bust your ass 24/7, sort of like I do, and you know, he goes on doing it to make sure that you have a better life and things like that. And he goes, so whatever you want to do, you know, you put 100% in and you know, you find something you like and go after it. So I think, you know, and obviously, you know, we have, you know, some good storytellers there in our family, you know, the things that get passed down and yarns and things like that. But I think, yeah, it was sort of, you know, my parents who sort of instilled in me, like, you know, that you could be anything you wanted to be, sort of thing, and that, you know, you just sort of, you know, you didn't have to be, you know, in this stereo sort of typical sort of thing where, you know, you could, you know, be a black fella and be well educated go out there and aim high chase your dreams and things like that.
So do what you love.
And certainly, yeah, you know, as I said, you know, Dad, he did. You know, he worked, 6 days a week, out on the roads and, with the earth-moving bloody machines and all those type of things, working on the road, putting, laying pipes and, all that sort of stuff. And, he worked right up until he got crook and couldn't work anymore. So, I think I got a bit of, that work ethic from him, and, completely different sort of jobs from me to him, talking cheese. But, the work ethic that I had, was that, I did everything the best I could, whether that was, out shooting or, writing a script or, presenting or things like that. I was just always made sure that, I was doing the best possible job.
Yeah, and just for the audience out there, when he says he's out shooting, he just means with a camera, not with a,
That's right.
Just, he's not a crazy man, Alf Lando. He's a sports journo.
Journalism jargon there, yeah.
Yeah.
Filming.
Keep it real for the people, Flando. Keep it real for the people, brother.
That's right.
Hey, bro. One of the things I love most about you, we've hung out for a few years, but when we worked together, it was your ability to find these really unique stories. And sometimes mainstream sports stories are really easy to tell because there's so much information. They're so easy to access. Your rugby league, your rugby union, your AFL, cricket, all these sort of yarns are pretty easy to tell. But the stories, you started bringing in disability stories, sports stories into our workplace, particularly the disability rugby league story. Can you tell us a yarn about that, how you found those stories? Because you got really involved, as we do as blackfellas, we're not just journos, we're family, we're brothers, we're sisters too, and we get really involved in what we do with our community. And you got really involved with the disability rugby league mob. You actually had a game with them down there. I was down there watching. Can you tell us a story about that, brother? Because I thought it was just, that for me was black sports journalism. You told Disability Rugby League, the way you brought our mob into their lives, because it was just an eye-opener.
Yeah, look, you're spot on. And you're right there too, Danny, where, as black journalists, you do get, emotionally invested too in a lot of stories, because, you may or may not know the person you're speaking to, but regardless, you get to know them over time, and you're asking people sometimes personal things or to open up about their stories and their backgrounds and that type of thing, and that's a talent, I guess, in itself to try and get that. That's what you want, to try as a journalist is to speak to people and get them to open up and trust you enough to tell you, their stories. Yep. So, you do get emotionally involved and, I think that's why, you always want to do your very best when you are speaking to people because it is their yarns, it's their story. But, with the Disability Rugby League, it was actually the great man Brad Cook, sports commentator, obviously, people would know him from calling the Koori Knockout and did a bit of work with ABC Radio. But
shout out, brother Mudgee.
Cookie was very good mates with Georgie Tonner, who's the who founded the rugby league, disability rugby league. George was he represented Australia at the 2000 Paralympic Games in soccer, but he was a mad South Sydney Rabbitohs supporter. He loved rugby league, loved watching it, and that's all he could do at the time. But he thought, well, how can I? And obviously, he knows a lot of people who are in the same sort of position as well. People with disabilities who absolutely love the game and are mad for it, and like we all are, but couldn't. There was no avenue for them to play, so he finally sort of got a rugby league sort of competition going, but it was just just two or three teams at the time when they first initially started. And by about 2016, and that's when I first started doing my very first story with them, was, that there was a actual competition. There was South, Manly, and Newtown, and the Roosters at the time.
Which is great because they're like their little NRL clubs, aren't they? They're like a little offshoot.
Yeah, that's right. And they've got affiliations, with the clubs.
They run out with all the gear on and...
That's right, and you know, especially the West Tigers. You know, they've done such a great job there too with their support for the West Tigers disability team. But yeah, they started. The competition is just amazing. Like they get out there and just absolutely go for it. They smash each other in tackles, and obviously some depending on their disability, a tag or touch. There's a couple of able-bodied players that wear the high-vis vests that sort of help. They're just usually dummy half players and just involved in terms of sort of passing and that type of thing. But, yeah, look, you're talking about people who have varying disabilities too. There's people with cerebral palsy. There's people who are blind, deaf. Some have... amputees, missing limbs, might be a leg or an arm. I didn't really know what to expect when Cookie said, hey, you should probably have a check this out and see what you can do. And I really didn't sort of know what to expect. You think physical, they've got disabilities and they play rugby league, and I'm thinking, okay, well, and it was totally beyond anything that I could have dreamed of.
Yeah, and I think for us that don't have disabilities, we take a very conservative and cautious approach in our minds to what disability rugby league is, and we think it's just safe and thing, and you can't hurt anybody. But these are athletes.
They flip the
narrative on us conservative able-bodied mob, because they're out there and they go hard, Flando. Hey, they don't muck around.
No,
and this is
they don't
not just mild disabilities. This mob got some severe disabilities here, and they just do not care.
No, and they get in there because that's what they want to do. They don't want to be treated differently.
Yep.
They want to play their sport. They love rugby league, so they love everything about it. They love hitting hard in tackles and stuff, and they love running the ball up. They there's a guy there, Todd Philpott, who's he was missing a leg from above the knee down, I think it was. He put a chip and chase in.
I remember that. I was there that day.
Unbelievable.
I remember that.
I couldn't chip and chase at the best of times, and he's a lad, he did that. Bill Bussell, mad lad from Campbelltown, in the Minto area there, he's just they love him down there, the old Bunyip. And he Bill's got cerebral palsy and it's quite sort of, severe, I guess, And I met him and his family, Arnie Kay, beautiful lady, and his brothers and that. But I remember watching Bill for the first time at the game, and he was coming across, getting out of the car and walking. This is before I'd even seen them play. And I'm watching him going, geez, look at this lad here, Bill. And, I've said it to him sort of since, and I said, I didn't even know how are you even going to play, the way he was sort of, his cerebral palsy was that he struggles to sort of walk sometimes, and I'm thinking, how's he going to play walking from the car park just to the dressing shed? And this is true of all of them, but once they pull on the boots and they pull on the jersey and stuff, it's like a change. It's like Superman going from Clark Kent to Superman, sort of thing. So they change. They're the 10 foot tall and they're bulletproof. And they play it like they are. They just, Bill goes from this lad who struggles to get from the car park to the dressing sheds.
Yeah.
And he's out there running, full steam ahead. He's crash tackling people. He's putting kicks in and all that sort of stuff. And this is, as I said, that's true for all of them. I left that first sort of game just being totally in awe, inspired. Because after the game, they knocked the absolute Christ out of each other. But they're all mates at the end of the game, shaking hands and laughing, and putting crap on each other. And there's a real camaraderie there. It's such a family orientated sport, because it is bringing in not just the players but the players' families. Like Bill's mum says, Bill wasn't supposed to live past the age of 6. He was never supposed to walk. He was never supposed to talk.
Yeah.
He's one of the loudest blokes on the field. He's, he runs the ball up harder than anyone else and stuff like that. So, it's what this game, does for their self-belief and self-esteem You know, it's given them something, and you know, they finally can go out there and play, and the game that they've loved and the game they watch on TV. Well, you know, they can go out there and do the same thing, and
yep.
You know, it's opening so many doors for so many people. You know, of,
yeah, because it's
varying ages.
It's really exploding the pathways for disability rugby league mob. I mean, I had. What's his name? Sorry, I just went blank. Dylan Walker. He's a son of Andrew Walker, rugby league, rugby union legend. I had Dylan here in here the other day doing an interview, and it's one of the reasons why I thought to interview you around disability rugby league, because he's involved with the Gold Coast Titans at the moment, and Preston Campbell is heavily involved in all of that. And shout out to the Titans for the great work they're doing in disability rugby league, actually. But we're seeing all the NRL clubs do this now, and now the women are starting to take it up too, which to me, it's just, you know, how much rugby league is a part of our lives for blackfellas on the East Coast. You know, we're talking about having disability rugby league events at the Koori Knockout now and the Queensland Murray Carnival. And to me, it's just a magical thing for our families out there with disabilities who love this game so much, who couldn't compete in it traditionally, but now they can, Flando. And you've opened this world. You've opened this world up for people to watch and see.
Yeah, I had the great privilege, and I for one of the, I think it might have been the 2017 All Stars, because they have, you know, this is the thing. It's not just the premiership with the teams competing. You know, obviously you know, they get to play for a grand final at the end of the year, but you know they've got representative games. There's a city country fixture. There's the All Stars, and that's the big one. That's the one they all love playing in. So it's the New South Wales Physical Disability All Stars versus the Indigenous combined sort of All Stars, and you know that brings together all the mob there who are playing, and you know they absolutely love it. It's played at Redfern Oval, which is obviously such a landmark spot and such a special place in so many people's minds and hearts and that type of thing. So, that's actually coming up in a couple of weeks' time. But I had the privilege there of, Georgie asked me, if I'd like to take part as one of the sort of able-bodied players. And, again, it was one of those eye-opener things there for me was, yeah, sure, by that stage I'd filmed a couple of games and I'd gone and watched a couple of games and that, but to actually be involved and on the field with them, it just like, wow, these guys are on another level. Like, you can feel the hitch, you can feel them having to, get up off the ground again and this is after getting smashed and, but it was a real privilege of playing with them. I think I was more of a hindrance than a help, but, the fact that they asked me to go out and sort of, have a run with them. I've got, friends and brothers there for life now, from being involved. And that's what it is too, They're real, as I said before, they're real family orientated because it brings their families in too. And they can see, they've watched their son or daughter, struggle, in other aspects of life and, finding work and just, general day-to-day things that they have to do in their life. But, come this sport that they love and, they just, as I said, it's changed, a lot of people's lives and it's given them so many things to sort of look forward to and just sort of get out there and show what they can do, As George and a lot of the other players like to say, once that whistle blows, there's no disabilities out there, They're all, just giving it their all.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a great thing to say, isn't it? Once that whistle blows, disability is gone. Hey, Flando, let's talk about the top eight in the NRL. Me and you always have a bit of banter.
Yes.
it's a long way down the bottom of the ladder if you look at the Bulldoggies. But what are your predictions for the top eight, my man? We always have these chants. And I think Parramatta's going to fade like an Uluru sunset. I'll jump in and say it before you do. the NRL's a big part of a lot of people's lives, as is AFL. What's your predictions for the top eight? And then we'll talk about the grand finals. This is our early July calls, brothers and sisters.
It is, Christmas in July, almost. But look, I think the the top three sides there at the moment, as you sort of see, you've got Penrith on top, Melbourne and the Cowboys. And, wow, haven't the Cowboys just been one of the, I guess, the big stories in terms of, I guess people sort of may have, I didn't think they'd be in the top four, this early just yet. Perhaps, top eight, but sort of maybe more around, 7th or 8th, or a lot of people may have even thought that the Cowboys may have sort of just missed out, but they are flying at the moment and playing some really good football under, Todd Payton. I just think they've...
Old Blue Eyes himself, Toddy Payton.
They've gone above and beyond, but, Penrith, they've just got... So there's just such a well-drilled, organised sort of team, and they are... playing for one another. Even some of the games where they've had, Cleary's been out and they've had, they've had to sort of bring in some of the younger roster in.
Like when they flog the doggies at night.
Yeah, well, look, you don't need much to beat Canterbury at the moment, but, Penrith, just such a well-drilled, organised team, and, look, it's going to be hard for them to get knocked off, who sort of rises to the occasion to beat them. Obviously, Melbourne just don't seem to ever, go backwards, do they? I mean, we thought they may have come back to the pack when they, the Cameron Smiths and your Billy Slaters and your Cooper Cronks sort of moved on or retired and that type of thing. But, people like, Ryan Pepinhaus and stuff like that, who just sort of kept that juggernaut sort of going, I guess, And, players like that, Nick Meaney, who's a really good player for Canterbury, like when obviously Canterbury have been struggling the last few seasons, but, that bloke, Nick Meaney, turned up week in.
Sorry, I didn't hear you then. What'd you say?
I said they've been struggling.
Ah, yeah. Sorry, I just...
But, it's like, Craig Bellamy has this amazing sort of... and I guess that system they've got in place there in Melbourne to turn these players into this out-and-out superstars week in, week out. Like, Nick Meaney was very good for us, and I thought, it was a shame to lose him. But, he's gone down there, and he's just gone to a different level again. So, Cronulla, obviously, playing some good football in the top eight as well. Nico Hines has been amazing. What a great boy he's been for Cronulla. And, he's really just gone on from playing in the All-Stars this year and sort of learning what it sort of takes to be a playmaker. He's gone from being a bench player at Melbourne when he was there last year, playing in different positions. Sometimes he was used at centre, sometimes he was used at 5'8", sometimes he was used at fullback.
Yep.
But now he's really found that sort of that spot for him there in the halves at Cronulla, and he's just made a huge difference. His kicking game's gone to a different level. I think Cronulla are doing quite well there as well. Brisbane, they're running 5th at the moment, and I guess you obviously living up there in Brisbane now too can sort of see wow, what a big difference Adam Reynolds has made to that team.
Oh yeah, oh yes indeedy. Yeah, the Broncos do great work up here for the Aboriginal communities and Torres Strait Island communities too. So it's hard not to get a bit of a soft spot for them, particularly when they have so many blackfellas up here playing for them. But yeah, they've been going pretty well, but I think they'll start to fade too.
Yeah. It's a massive turnaround. That Selwyn Cobbo is just absolutely amazing to watch. I got to speak to him along with a lot of other journos there. And after the first Origin in Sydney, and he was just this wide-eyed young fella there, was a bit shy about having a yarn to everyone because everyone wanted to speak to him. Just an awesome talent, and the thing what he did there in game one, with that little kick ahead for Dane Gagai's try, and what he's going to be able to produce now and in the future is there's some big years ahead for him. Then you look at the rest of the eight, Parramatta in 6th, South 7th, and St George in the top eight. I mean, like, geez,
St George can't play.
St George in shout out to Alfie and his number one hit.
That's all I remember from those grand final days.
who would have picked St George to be sort of up there at the moment as well? And I don't know, maybe, you know, St George could, you know, I mean, will they be able to sort of keep that up? That's the big thing. You know, St George could, you know, easily sort of, you know, slip down and go the other way there too. You know, South have really missed Adam Reynolds big time. You know, I think, you know, Cody Walker's, you know, trying to do, you know, play his game, but I think he really misses his mate, his little general there, you know, that great combination that sort of took them all the way to the grand final last year, you know.
It's Cody Walker, the Koury knockout version. He just starts swinging before he does anything.
he's trying every little, you know, trick in the bag there, and, you know, it's sort of, I guess, showing on the park there too for South. Obviously, you know, they've had Latrell out for a long periods of time at the moment this year, so, you know, I think South will stay in the top eight, and, you know, they'll obviously when Mitchell comes back too, that'll be a huge boost. Now, you've already said Parramatta on the slide, so you've already took the words out of my mouth for that one.
I don't like Gutherson. You know how tragic I am with Parramatta.
Yes.
And, you know, I might be a Dolphins fan next year the way I'm going, but I just can't stand Gutherson and Moses. I can't see us winning a premiership under those two.
Yeah, well, look, you know,
it's too much about them. And, you know, if they were amazing people and players, I don't think you'd see a lot of people leaving like they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, it's been...
you know, we've lost a lot of good players this year, you know, and even Reed Marnie losing. If we loved them fellas, he'd be staying there. But he's going to the kennel to get the wooden spoons.
Listen, look, you know, a lot of para players have left, Parramatta over the years to come to Canterbury, and you know they've done very well. You know, Andrew Ryan and, you know, Willie Tonga for one. You know,
Dean Page, Aaron McCracken.
they won a premiership before going to the cellar.
Yeah. Righto.
You always talk about that premiership window, don't you? You always hear that a lot with the commentators and experts and things like that. And, you know, Parramatta sort of, is the window sort of starting to drop down again, because, you know, they did have that sort of run where they were, you know, they were playing some great football, and, you know, it just sort of seemed like, you know, even last year too, you know, where they were sort of, you know, not that far away again from getting, you know, to a grand final. But, you know, yeah, you've got to take those opportunities and really go with them, because, yeah, look, it sort of seems now that window is starting to shut again for Parramatta. And, you know, their form this year, when you look at it, they've been able to travel to Melbourne and beat Melbourne in Melbourne. But then, you know, they've lost to the Tigers.
Yeah, and the Dogs.
And, you know, they've beaten other sort of...
I'll say this about Parramatta. Parramatta can beat anybody, but anybody can beat Parramatta.
Mm.
You know? Flander, I've got to wrap it up soon, brother, but let's get some grand final predictions from you. From our full-time with Flando, amazing sports journalist, I want some grand final predictions, brother. Christmas in July predictions.
I think Penrith will be there, and if they stay fit, I can't see them getting beat. I think they will probably go back-to-back. Yeah, they've just had this wonderful form the last couple of seasons, and as I said, you know, if they can stay fit, have your Clearys, your To'os, you know, your Luais, your Kickows, you know, it's a wonderful
Kickow game. Now,
you know, Isaac Yeo, some of these players now are going to bring back that great Origin experience again.
Yep.
And with an injury free run after Origin's done, I can't see them really getting beat. Who plays them in the grand final? It could be Melbourne. Maybe, you know, is there a dark horse? Yeah, sure. Maybe North Queensland or Cronulla to play them in the grand final. But I think Penny Panthers, and, you know, obviously, you know, they'd like to win again too. But, you know, they've got players like Viliami Kikau, who's leaving at the end of the year too, and he's been a mainstay there for a number of seasons. So they're sort of starting to lose some of that makeup of the team that won last year. Obviously, you know, Burton is already at Canterbury. And so, yeah, I think as a group, the tight-knit group that they've got, I just can't see them getting beat. I think Penrith win. And as I said, maybe against Melbourne, or if not, a dark horse sort of coming out. Yeah, probably, and it's not that they're a dark horse anyway. As I said, North Queensland and Cronulla are both playing some wonderful football to, and they could possibly, be there against Penrith.
Yeah, and Chad Townsend's a premiership winning halfback. So, Cowboys, look out and make our CEO up here very, very happy. Flander, I've got to wrap it up now, brother, but thanks for coming on and having your full time with Flander. Our segment that we dreamed up of in the wee hours of the morning a few years ago. It's great to see it still going now, full time with Flando. Thanks for jumping on and having a mad sports chat with us, particularly around disability rugby league and bringing that to life for our audiences, because it's such a magical thing.
Pleasure to be on, brother, and to talk to you any time. So, the disability mob, as I said, they've got their All-Stars game on and NAIDOC week down here at Redfern Oval too. So if you're around the traps there, get along to it.
No worries, my bro. Well, you have a good day. Thanks for listening, my people. Like I said, it's our greatest sports journalist, in my opinion, Chrissy Flanders. He's Tony's grandfather, in fact, people. thanks for joining us today, and let's talk on Triple A Murray Country.